everybody ready to go. Let's stand by and cue house lights to black in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You're listening to The Growing Up Rock Podcast with Stephen Michael and Sonny Hollywood Pooney. Now, crank it up.
All right, Sonny Pooney, it's time for our next Night Ranger record. As we said, in 2024, we're going through all the Night Ranger albums from start to finish, exploring each track, and we are up to the fourth studio record by Night Ranger, which is called Big Life. Pooney, do you have a big life?
No. I don't know how I'm supposed to answer that. I have no idea.
Yeah, I don't even know where I'm going with that.
Yeah, thanks. Especially since you said you were going to be scrubbing me before we start. I don't know what the hell you're looking for.
That's a different kind of scrub. Settle down there, Pooney. Don't get too excited. All right. So just like we do on most of these episodes, we got to bring in a special guest. And for this episode, we're bringing back a returning guest of the Grown Up Rock Podcast, our old friend, Mr. Kevin Williams from the In Obscuria Podcast. Kevin, what's going on?
Oh, my God. You said my name. You actually said who I am because you were doing a recap, you know, last year, and you mentioned every other person that you did a show with, except for me.
As a podcaster, you know it's a fly-by-the-seat-of-your-pants type deal.
No, I think you scratched through my name on the on your notes that you had. That's what I'm thinking.
I only had one name to remember for this particular recording, and it was staring me right in the face, so it was easy. I not only got your name right, but I also got your podcast name right. I'm doing well.
You are, and I appreciate you guys having me back on. I can't believe it.
You know, you always end up making an appearance on the Grown Up Rock Podcast at least once, most of the time, probably two or three times throughout the course of an entire year. So I don't know how many times you've been on this show, but it's been more than a few. So it's all good.
Usually I'm known as the loser because I lose every game you have.
And to be honest, I've been invited to the firehouse, but it was kind of a token invite because I got invited, but then nobody ever made good on the invite to the firehouse. So honestly, I just think you're trying to be nice to me. And then you walked away and never called me.
That's how we do on the In Obscuria podcast. We make lots of offers and never really follow up.
It's the In Obscuria guest host.
We will have you both on. We just have to get our shit together.
I actually live in the same town as Kevin and Robert, and still I can't get a – I get an invite. It's not right to say I can't get an invite. I can get an invite, but
– We invite you every week. It's just not to your – you know, we don't text you that, but we say it.
That's right. I show up at the firehouse, knock on the door, and nobody answers. And then I hear a bunch of giggling inside.
That's about right.
All right, so we're getting into Night Ranger's fourth record. Let me ask you, Kevin, is Night Ranger a band that you enjoy, or is it another one of these Sonny Pooney called me and said, did I want to do it? And I just said, sure, I'll do it.
Yes and no.
Okay, I can't wait to hear this. So before we get too far into that, let's talk about your podcast. Let's talk about the In Obscuria podcast. If you've been a longtime listener to the Grown Up Rock podcast, most likely you know about the In Obscuria podcast. I know we share a lot of the same listeners, but if you're just joining the podcast because you're a Night Ranger fan and you love Big Life, so you're tuning in for the first time, why don't you tell the listeners about the In Obscuria podcast?
Yeah, absolutely. So we are obviously talking about bands that are more obscure in the realm of rock, punk, and metal. So we go any genre that has heavy guitar, we're going to cover it. We get into everything from Japanese metal and Visual K to bubblegum glam from the 70s. So we really span a lot of different genres within rock, punk, and metal, but it's all intended to be stuff that's either lost, forgotten, or we think should have been big. So we don't cover a lot of mainstream acts, although sometimes we do. Sometimes it would be a song from a mainstream act from an album that everybody wants to forget, or maybe the artist wants to forget it and we don't, we bring it back. Or it could be something that's like adjacent to a major artist or a major mainstream act that maybe you didn't know about. So we do get into some mainstream bands, but for the most part, it is more obscure. Yeah. So my co-host and I, Robert, who you mentioned, we record at his home, which happens to be the old Smyrna Firehouse here in Atlanta, Georgia. So that's it.
And I'll even do you one better. If you're a listener of the Grown Up Rock podcast and you like the series that we do called the 250 list, it's like the 250 list on steroids. That's your show.
Yeah. Yeah. And every time you do that list, I'm like, I have that one. Oh, I have that one. Oh, I have that one too.
Yeah. What was the stupid band name that I was making fun of? And you're like, yeah, I know that band. I got that record.
That's not really narrowing it down.
What was that? God, what was that band name? It was something. Oh, hell, I'll never remember now, but it was in one of the earlier volumes anyway. That's basically it. And I know a lot of people like that 250 list, which is interesting, what people love and don't love. So In Obscuria Podcast, go give it a listen. See if it's your thing when it comes to podcasts.
Please make sure you hit that follow button to subscribe to Growing Up Rock Podcast so you don't miss an episode.
Getting back to the Night Ranger. So let's talk a little bit of a history lesson with you, Kevin Williams. Where did Night Ranger come into your radar? And are you a fan? Are you a casual fan? What's the situation with you and the Ranger?
Before we get to that, I have the text right here. So before he sells me down the river, I need to read the text as is, okay? So the text I sent him was, any interest in reviewing a Night Ranger album with you are as part of our 2024 album review series. The albums we have left to choose are Midnight Madness, Big Life, Man in Motion, Feeding Off the Mojo, Neverland, and Seven. Let me know. So he goes, I'll take Seven Wishes. I'm like, cool. And then later on, I'm like, wait a second, Seven Wishes wasn't on the list, right? And somebody had just took Midnight Madness. So I'm like, dude, you got Big Life, Man in Motion, Feeding Off the Mojo, Neverland, or Seven. He goes, oh, I thought the Seven was the Seven Wishes. I'm like, oh my God, dude, he goes, I'll take Big Life.
Because that's the fourth album that I have. I own four albums by Night Ranger, the first four.
Well, hey, there's at least that, and at least he got the Seven part of Seven Wishes right, so I could see where he made that mistake.
I was like, oh, I guess I don't know their catalog that well. And that leads into my Night Ranger experience. So I'm Mr. Obscure Guy. I can tell you any minutia about some band that you've never heard of, but when it comes to Night Ranger, I have only been listening to them for 2 years.
Wow.
Wow.
I'll tell you why. So for some reason, so I think I've mentioned before on the program, but I have like a punk rock skateboard, like I was a little skate rat when I was, you know, eighth, ninth grade. That's when I started really getting into music, and I started with punk, and then I moved into metal and rock from there. And for some reason in my adolescent brain, which has never changed, I had put three bands in a category of, this is cheesy corporate rock, I'm so punk and anarchist that I will never go to these bands. And so that list is Foreigner, REO Speedwagon, and Night Ranger. Those three I vowed never to listen to, ever.
That's it.
And then?
No, and then. That's all I want.
And then?
And then nothing else because I'm done ordering, okay?
And then?
No, see, all I want is the three orders of the garlic chicken and the three orders of the white rice.
Huh, and then?
And the soup, dude.
Oh, and the wonton soup.
And then?
And the cookies fortune.
Hey, and the fortune cookies, yeah. So it's just the chicken, the rice, the soup, and the fortune cookies, and that's it.
And then?
No, and then!
And then?
No, and then!
And then!
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 No, no, and then.
And then
you're gonna start to piss me off, lady.
And then,
I'm gonna come in there and I'm gonna put my foot in your ass if you say and then again.
Now that being said, at the same time, I was falling in love with Styx and Boston and Journey.
And I love corporate bands of all corporate bands.
This is my brain. And my favorite Quiet Riot album is QR3. So what the hell's wrong with me? I don't know.
You were really sticking it to the man, Kevin.
I
yeah.
really was. And so anarchy. So that being said, that stuck with me for all of these years into my adulthood. If I heard it on the radio, cool. You know, Sister Christian. Yeah, sure. Knew that. You know, the Foreigner, the REO stuff. Knew that. But it took Joey Haney, who's a fellow podcaster, to bring me into this world of awesome AOR music. And like I said, I already loved Boston, I already loved Journey, so I'm just a moron. But he sent me this band called the Night Flight Orchestra and said, you need to check this band out. And I checked them out and I loved it. And I got every album that they have. I think they're amazing. But what they are is a newer band kind of doing this style of music, but interpreting it as now. And it got me kind of on this kick to, I need to explore more of this kind of stuff. You know, this is the stuff that I wrote off when I was a kid and just never went back to. So all these years later, I go and I start buying REO and Foreigner and Night Ranger. And I'm just like discovering this music. It's new to me. And I'm like, what the hell was wrong with me? This is amazing stuff, you know, but it's kind of cool in a way because I'm discovering music that I really should have already known, but I'm getting to it now in my adulthood. So it's kind of fun in a way too. But that's my Night Ranger story. I am a fan, but I only own the first four albums at this point.
And that's okay, because some people would say that's the only record you need to own. I mean, honestly, they, you know, some people would tell you that's the only record you need to own. It varies. I'm not one of those people. I think there's a lot of good stuff after the first four records. But when did power pop come into your life then? Because you're a big power pop fan as well.
Yeah, to me, power pop is very similar to punk. A lot of the, like, when I first got into punk, it was hardcore punk. So, like, it's like almost unlistenable to a lot of people. But then I started getting into more of the pop punk. And to me, pop punk is power pop. It's kind of the same thing. So I was able to kind of go down that rabbit hole without, you know, sticking to my adolescent rules that I put upon myself.
Fair enough. All right. So how about Big Life in particular? Was that the last of the four records? Did you get all four at the same?
I got them in order. Yep. I got them in order. It was the last one I got.
Okay. Fair enough. How about you, Sonny Pooney? What's your Big Life story?
Yeah. So it's 87. And this album was my entry point in having physical product from Night Ranger. So, of course, the hits were all over San Francisco Bay Area radio stations. Secret of My Success. The movie was getting big, so the song was huge. I actually loved the movie, seen it many, many, many times. But I was, you know, I was 18, right, when the stuff came out. So it happened to hit right when I needed to, and I was in the Bay Area. If I'm not in the Bay Area, I probably don't even sniff this stuff, except, you know, I know Sister Christian, that's probably it. But when you're there, local radio stations make every band that's from the Bay Area feel like they're number one all over the world. So you really got no choice because they're on the radio all the time.
Yeah, and for me, Big Life was basically the last Night Ranger record for me before I started checking out on the band. This is where I sort of started losing interest in Night Ranger as a whole, and we'll talk about that a little more as we go through the record and everything. But yeah, so that's the story with Big Life for the three of us. So let's get into some basic facts about this album. So the album was released March 23rd, 1987. It was recorded once again at Fantasy Studios, Berkeley, California, and then a bunch of other studios because they move around. Total length of the record is 42 minutes. Labels, once again, MCA. But this is actually the first record where they leave behind the old producer, the producer that produced the first three records, and they move on to Kevin Elson. And Night Ranger themselves produced the record as well. And then they had some other people producing Secret of My Success. The classic lineup is still intact. So you got Jeff and Brad on guitars, Kelly on drums and vocals, Fitz on keyboards, and Jack on bass and vocals. The singles released from this record were The Secret of My Success, Color of Your Smile, and Hearts Away. The peak Billboard position for this record on the top 200 was at number 28. That's where it peaked out. The album did end up certifying gold, which I'm guessing is going to be considered a failure since the last two records were platinum. That's just my guess. This is also the last record that was recorded with Fitz on keyboards until he returns on the Neverland record, which is quite a ways down the road. Let's talk about the album cover. So the album cover, to me, features the band once again on the album cover in sort of, I don't know what you would call it, a backstage area, back of a movie set. I'm really not sure. Sonny Pooney, what are your thoughts on this album cover?
I'm going to start with the back cover first. So they all still look good. It's a little more neutral than the front cover, because I'll tell you why in a second. Fitz seems like he's a little bit farther back on the back cover, which is a little weird. The front cover, everybody looks good. Fitz has that stupid beatnik goofy artist hat on or whatever. But Jack has now adopted the Superman pose, and he has now decided to kind of separate himself a bit, right? If you're looking at who is the leader of the band right there, Jack is trying to say out loud, it's me, right?
And who's in the back, right?
Yeah.
Fitz is all the way in the back.
He's no more separated, though, than Kelly.
Yeah, but Kelly's not doing the Superman pose.
True. The thing that sticks out most to me about this album cover is how glamour shots all of them are. I mean, they're all glamour shotted up. Their hair is like perfect. They're wearing, you know, new duds. It's just a different look for them, which I'm assuming is going to be based on, you know, the time, right? 1987.
Yeah, that's
little Miami Vice.
Yeah, everything that's happening. The Rob Lowe's got the same haircut. Like, it's, dude, it's 1987. Like, every cool actor and every cool person on TV has got those same haircuts. So they're, of course, they're glamored up.
Night Ranger logo front and center sticks out. So that's there. Big Life is spelled out across the bottom in letters, easy to read. Kevin, what are your thoughts on this album cover?
All right. So the obvious thing is Fitz is the man, because only...
Oh, my God, the hat.
Only Fitz and I have rocked the beret like that. So, yeah, I've got one on right now. I will be sending yours in the mail.
That's great, Frenchie. I appreciate it. When's the revolution?
He's the star of this thing. Yeah, rocking the beret. So here's the thing. I have this, if I don't know, you can hardly see it, but I have a version that I bought that has the Night Ranger logo kind of covered up. So there's a bunch of signs on the front, and it's kind of covered up.
Okay.
See how it's covered? Is that how yours is? Because I think there's two different covers.
Well, that's how the cover is that I've inserted into this spreadsheet that we're doing. I don't know, Sonny, is your cover like that?
There's another version that doesn't have any other signs on it, and it just has the Night Ranger logo centered. And I like that one a lot better, because this one with the signs, I don't like covering up the logo like that.
Yeah, I agree with you. It is distracting.
So mine is not covered up.
Exactly. That's the second cover. So I don't know when they changed it, but I'm glad they did. It looks better.
Well, he's got a CD cover. I wonder if the difference is the CD versus the album, because you had an album.
This is original CD, though. This is from 87.
It's from 87. Weird.
Yeah, I still wonder if it has anything to do with the CD versus the album.
Well, that's just bizarre. Oh, well.
Yeah, I like that much better.
You know what that one still has, though, what the CD version still has?
What?
The Rockin' Beret.
Yeah, and the Superman pose.
Nice.
Their clothes are like, you couldn't get any more. Hey, give me the JCPenney catalog for cool duds in 1987. That's it, man.
Ripped jeans and cowboy boots, baby.
Yeah.
And bolos.
And berets.
And berets. And a blazer.
I think Fitz doesn't have any pants on. That's why he's back there.
Sucks to be Brad Gillis, doesn't it?
Well, look on the back cover, because he has like parachute pants and high top white sneakers. So there you go.
Yeah, that's true.
I think it might also have been the record label or the photographers trying to hide the lesser rock guy in back, right?
Yeah, but you let him have the shitty hat on, though?
He's always worn that hat, though. He can't get rid of it now. That's become his trademark, the hat and sunglasses, right?
Hey, he's not wearing scrubs this time, so you got that.
Yeah, that was two albums ago. He moved on. None of them are wearing flight suits on this record. So
yeah,
that's a new look for him.
So last weekend, Nicole and I went to the Air Force Museum. There's a National Air Force Museum here in Dayton. And they've got an old Air Force One in there. They've got a space shuttle in there. They've got missiles in there. It separates World War One, World War Two, the Korean War, the Vietnam War, that kind of thing. We get to the World War Two side. And the bomber's there with the people at the bottom, people at the top, you know, the two-level bomber thingy. And she's like, oh, the bomber has two levels? I'm like, yeah, it was on Seven Wishes. Of course it has two levels. She's like, what the hell are you talking about? I'm like, it's a Night Ranger album. She goes, why is everything like cartoons, Seinfeld, and Night Ranger, or music? Why is that way? I'm like, because that's my life.
So, yeah, I saw that on Aces High.
So that Air Force base in Dayton, that's Patterson, right?
I don't know. The museum's not on the Air Force Base.
This is part of the UFO folklore, right? Patterson Air Force Base is where they supposedly took the discovered bodies from Roswell.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
Yeah,
did you see those?
No, I did not see those.
You didn't open any unlocked doors?
No, we did walk through Air Force One, though. That's pretty cool.
I don't even know if Patterson still exists, but I think that's where Patterson was Dayton.
Like what you're hearing? Share this episode out. Post it to your favorite social network and let people know you're listening to the Growing Up Rock podcast. It will help us grow, and we greatly appreciate it.
All right. So first track is Big Life. And Kevin, to me, like, I get the mood setting star, the sci-fi keyboard thing. I'm glad it kicks in about 30 seconds in. But is that Jack rapping in the verses? Is that him rapping?
I believe it is. Yeah, man. This wow. So the keyboard sound at the beginning, and it's like almost on every track, they have this keyboard swell thing going on, which is very 87. But it reminded me right away. So in 1987, it was right when I was getting into wanting to be in bands and learning how to play music. And I had this friend of mine named Richard Carnes. I remember this. And he bought this thing called the Roland D50. And it was like the most state-of-the-art keyboard at that time in 1987.
I had one.
It came out in 87. You had one. Okay.
Yeah.
Every sound on this album, I'm like, oh, I remember that patch. Oh, yeah, I remember that patch. He just used everything that was in the Roland D50. So it brought me right back. I'm like, oh, I know that one. But I mean, the riff on this thing, the big drums, I mean, the production is killer on this. And it sounds crunchy to me. I will say that I had to listen to it a few times when I was kind of writing my notes. And I'm like, what is that riff in the verse? What is that? I'm like, oh, my God, it's Still of the Night. It's exactly Still of the Night in the verse, the riff. If you listen, go back and listen to it. And then I was like, well, wait a minute. How did they copy Still of the Night?
Oh, yeah. They can't copy Still of the Night. Still of the Night comes out after this.
No, it came out in the exact same day. Isn't that crazy?
And that's MCA and Geffen. So they're not even sharing the same record company.
But go AB it. You're like, holy shit, it's the same riff. But it's just the verse riff. The rest of it's not. But the other thing I hear, and Sonny, you're not going to like this, but the other thing I hear is very reminiscent of Yes's 90215 style of layering in the keyboards with the guitars. It's very Trevor Horn style production. I don't know if the producer was trying to mimic that, but he was like the hot producer at that time. So I hear a little Yes in here.
Come on, so get to be square. When the world hits your heart right here in the face, what do I know? I don't care.
Yeah, Stephen, I don't hear any yes in here. Yes is no. What I hear is Big Life, the song, is like written for radio. It sounds arena filling big. And I think, you know, that's where Kevin's kind of talking about the production. It's like they have arrived. They are no longer this little band that happened to hit big on Sister Christian. Although the album didn't exactly hit top 20 on Billboard 200. But I thought the song was pretty big. What did you think?
Yeah, I mean, at this point, they've had two successful albums back to back. For me, I really love the riff. Yeah, it's a big sound. I agree with both you guys on that. For me personally, this song is a good mixture of keyboards and guitar. So I don't mind that. I like it as long as they don't lose all the guitar. Whereas like Seven Wishes, you know, I was trying to find that guitar for the first part of the record. So this is out front for me, so I'm pretty happy about that. I will say the chorus maybe seems a little bit lazy to me for this song, but other than that, I dig it. I like the song.
I didn't mention the guitar leads, and you guys can tell me because you're the bigger Night Ranger fans, but to me, this is, of the albums that I've listened to, this is just the guitar leads have just gone up a whole other level than they were before. I don't know what was going on with them at this time, but they were trying to really say, we are those same kinds of guitars that are getting these shrapnel deals. You know, we're that level, and they bring it in every single song. There's not a song on this album, because I'll just go ahead and say it now. There's not a song on this album that every guitar lead's not just impressive and amazing.
Yeah, I think they were looking at, you know, whether it's Whitesnake or whether it's Rat or whether it's Priest or whether it's Maiden, anybody that they're looking at that is hot in the 80s right now, it's got this the dual guitar that's untouchable almost, right? But Gillis and Watson had everything that those guys had, right? It just, they wrote Sister Christian. They didn't write Still the Night, right? Or they didn't write, you know, Turbo Lover, I guess. I don't know, whatever. But so I think it's the competition that puts you there. And they're still competing with Eddie Van Halen because every record they're releasing is going number one, right? So
right,
just what it is. All right, second track we got, Color of Your Smile. So, you know, gets to the guitar riff fairly quickly, so that's good. But Kevin, I've labeled these type of songs as movie soundtrack Night Ranger. Like, this could have been on Midnight Madness and could have been on basically any mid-80s movies you can think of. What did you think about the song?
I have that in my notes here. I said, more big riffage. This is the beginning of a movie soundtrack song. Unfortunately, it's not the movie soundtrack that I want to listen to because it goes into like Kenny Loggins territory, and I'm not cool with where this goes. The chorus to me is so cheesy on this one. I can't get into it. The only thing saving this song are the guitar harmonies, because like you said, they're doing some crazy, just brilliant guitar harmonies on this together. The beginning, I will say, another keyboard intro, and it almost feels like, again, they're using that Roland D50 patch, but it almost feels like we're getting ready to get into a Trans-Siberian Orchestra Christmas song, and then it gets into like Kenny Loggins. So it's all over the place for me. This one doesn't do it for me.
Yeah. So Steven, I mean, Night Ranger had made a basically two very popular successful albums out of Blades goes and writes a catchy, memorable, simple, fun chorus that's cheesy, and then the two guitar guys have to keep the guys interested. That's basically what Night Ranger is all about.
Yeah, and that always seems to fall to this number two slot on their records, doesn't it? Yeah, to me, I mean, look, this is a single that they released that failed the chart. So the song did not do well on the charts. I still love it. It's upbeat and it's happy. I don't need to be the punk guy that's always sad. Kevin Williams looking at you.
That's why this sucks.
It's upbeat and it's happy. I dig the riff in it. I like the bridge before the solo break. I think that's a nice change. And you already alluded to it. It's got great solos in it. So, yeah, I mean, this is a winner song for me. I like it.
Third song we got is Love Is Standing Near. This one also kind of felt movie soundtrack to me. The guitar has a little more grit to it to me, but it's almost as if the producer is saying, all right, we got to cut out the noodling on this song because we're going to try to get this thing on the radio. So guys, get that noodling out and go put that somewhere else. Just kind of tone it down a little bit. Like, the song all feels a little toned down to me. Kevin, what do you think?
I agree. This is an amazing song. I think I did that to you last time. So it starts off and I'm like, is this going to be a ballad? It's got kind of a journey, kind of mid-tempo thing building up. And then you got those guitar harmonies coming in the intro. And I think it's really cool. And then the verse kicks in And this is where I go, oh, just like Sonny says, we're in movie soundtrack territory. Now, the difference is this is a film that I want to watch. And this, my friends, is the first montage song. So we're going to put on our headband and we're going to have a montage 80s style.
I love it. The callback to South Park. It's fantastic.
I mean, I was seeing like Rocky or like Gleam in the Cube, some sort of BMX race or fighter pilot movie, you know, all those cheesy things that they did in the 80s. This song would have been great on it. It has kind of a proggy bridge, which I dig. And again, I mean, the lead on this thing is awesome. So I got some Journey vibes, so I felt like I had to put on the montage outfit here.
My guess is for this song is if the album would have sold better right out of the gate, that this ends up being a single, possibly the fourth single, but Color of Your Smile not charting. Like, I think they were going to release a fourth single no matter what. I think they were done putting money into this album.
Well, it's interesting you say that because that's actually one of my notes, which is I was surprised that this was not released as a single before Color of Your Smile, to be honest, because I think this is close to a hit. I think this would have done much better than Color Your Smile. Not that I necessarily like it better, but the average radio listener would like it better. So written by Fitz Blades and Kelly Keegi. It's a little keyboard heavy, but I like when it finally gets out of that intro and falls into the groove of the verses. I like that thumping groove of the verse. It's standard sort of 80s pop for me. Which matches the time. So I'm not saying anything other than that's what it sort of reminds me of. Yeah, I mean, it's not a bad tune.
And then on the last song on side one, Rain Comes Crashing Down. Okay, Jack, I love you, but we don't need a minute to set up a Night Ranger song. Like, we just don't need it. And then to set it up to basically a song that's Toto to me, but it's musical theater Toto. I thought the song was a bit boring, and I'm sure Kevin loved it.
Got to put the beret back on. This is a Fitz jam, man. This is a total Fitz jam. Sonny, the beginning, it's to hell with the devil. That old keyboard thing at the beginning is to hell with the devil. Yeah. I was waiting for those guitars to come in. I'm like, wait a minute, they stole this from Stryper. So it's interesting listening to it now instead of when it came out. You know, I wasn't there. I wasn't listening to it. But listening to it now, I'm like, oh my God, there's this whole movement going on right now for maybe the last, call it 5 or 10 years, called synthwave. Are you guys aware of this movement? It's like these keyboard sounds. They're like using retro keyboards. They're putting out music that some of it's instrumental, some of it's not, but it sounds like 80s movie soundtrack style of music with keyboards. And this is exactly what they're trying to replicate on these albums in this whole movement that they're doing right now. And there's bands that are getting kind of big with it. There's a band called The Midnight who just came through Atlanta. And they do this exact same sort of thing, and they have vocals and everything. I'm like, oh my God, this is exactly, I bet this is like number one on their playlist, this song. So hearing it now, it's kind of cool because I like a lot of this retro synthwave stuff that's going on right now, even though it's not rock, punk, or metal, but it's, I don't know, I find it interesting. But I like that this has just like a hint of darkness in it. So it's not so happy like the other song that was way too happy. So this has just like a little hint of darkness in the verse, which kind of keeps me in. It's not a great song, but I still think it's kind of cool.
Shadows you leave behind. when there's no one left around. I'll be the rain that's crashing.
Yeah, and Stephen, I think that darkness is probably, it's mid-tempo, right? It's almost a ballad, almost, but it doesn't quite get there.
So my notes on this song are going to be really close to what you were saying earlier, Sonny. To me, it's a little dramatic. It's slower. It's okay for me. To be honest, it gets a bit boring without a great hook or a payoff. Which is unusual for Night Ranger, because usually they find a good melody or a good hook that kind of brings you in. And to me, this song doesn't do that. It's musical, dramatic theater with just it doesn't go anywhere for me. It's just okay. I mean, I don't hate it, but meh.
I do like that they try to bring it up at the end, because they start to build a little bit with the leads at the end and everything, trying to give it a little bit, you know, make it a little bigger at the end, but yeah, it doesn't quite come over.
I mean, and I'll say this before we move on to side two. The one thing that kind of screams out at me about this record early on is that in the past, Night Ranger always did a pretty good job of having some really good, memorable melodies and hooks. And I don't know that at least the first part of this record that there's a whole lot of that. It's not that the songs are bad. I'm not saying that, because I do like the first three songs on the record quite a bit. But when I listen back to them, as I did a lot this past couple weeks, I wasn't able to put my anchor on anything and go, man, that's a great hook, or that's a really memorable melody, which I think appears quite a bit on the first three records.
Yeah. So before we go on to Secret of My Success, because it only got to number 64, I went to the Billboard 200 and I'm like, all right, this thing topped out at 28. Like, what the hell's the problem? What's interesting, what I found out in the data, and I'll share this, the five records that were in the top 20 at the time that it could have, I guess, competed against, is Sister Christian hits in 84. They have that huge record. They go to 85. They still have top 20 hits. And as the hair metal wave is literally coming like a tidal wave, it is somehow missing Night Ranger, because Night Ranger's on the way out of the tidal wave somehow. Like, they left the station, right? Because top 20 on the day that they hit number 28 in 87, at 19, Whitesnake's 87 record, at 15, Night Song Cinderella, at 9, The Final Countdown by Europe, at 4, Look at What the Cat Dragged In, Poison, at 3, Slippery When Wet, Bon Jovi. Like, if you're going to hit with these songs, this is the time to hit. And for some reason, Night Ranger's almost done.
They went the wrong direction with it.
Yeah.
Because like look at my circumstance. Like, I liked all those other bands you just named. I'm not the biggest Bon Jovi fan, but at the time I still liked all those bands that you just named. But for some reason, I put Night Ranger in a different category. So there's something to that. There's some reason. I mean, I know it was dumb on my part, but there's still something to that of, for some reason, they got lumped in with kind of early 80s scene versus what was happening in the mid to late 80s.
Yeah, yeah. And it feels like at Midnight Madness, they're about to be the pre-Tesla. And by the time they get to Tesla's on the charts now, they get away from being Tesla. Does that make sense? Like, they almost meant more pop than hair metal.
Yeah, they went pop. That's what this is a pop album.
Well, and there's also one glaring thing. If you look at those bands that you mentioned, MCA was not a good record label at the time. I mean, the bands you're talking about were on the Geffens and the Capitol Sony Records, and, you know, they're on record labels that know what to do.
Yeah.
You can help out the podcast greatly by leaving us a 5-star review at Apple Podcasts, Podchaser, or Spotify. The links are in the show notes, or just drop us a line at our email, growinguprock@gmail.com.
Hello, Pantheon podcast listeners. Christian Swain here to tell you more about my experience with Raycon earbuds. Our family now has three pairs of Raycon earbuds around the house. And my wife just grabbed a pair of the Headphone Pros to replace some headphones from a company that was double the price. And yes, she loves them. Now, if you haven't pulled the trigger on a pair of Raycons, or even if you have, but you're in the market for another pair because they're just that good, well, now is the time to check them out. Because they just launched their upgraded model of the best-selling everyday earbuds. With Raycon's upgraded everyday earbuds, now you also get active noise cancellation, ergonomic design, and multi-point connectivity that lets you pair with two devices at once, new quick charge function, three customizable sound styles, plus awareness mode, available in a variety of vibrant new colors to complement any and all skin tones. I even have a pair of earbuds in a cool green color. I have tried just about every earbud known to humankind, and these Raycons are fantastic. Seriously, if you've been wanting to check out Raycons, there truly is no better time. You're going to ask yourself why you didn't check them out sooner, and Raycon offers a 30-day happiness guarantee. So, what are you waiting for? Go to buyraycon.com/pantheon today to get 20% off your Raycon order, plus free shipping. That's right, you'll get 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/pantheon. buyraycon.com/pantheon.
All right, so we got The Secret of My Success. If you don't know, Michael J. Fox was the person that requested the band to write and record the song. So he was a Night Ranger fan, and he wanted them to do the song. I honestly think it should have done better on the charts. And the movie, it's an 80s movie. It's campy as Michael J. Fox. Michael J. Fox is a lovable guy, and all the shit that he's been through and him still being with us, I think just makes him more of a lovable guy. But I saw this movie probably 2 weeks ago. It was still good, right? So it's like, you know what? The movie didn't really age that bad, and I enjoy it, and it's fun. And hearing Night Ranger song in there, I'm like, wow, this is actually pretty cool. I really did like this song, and this song was played all the time. So you don't have a teak on it, Kevin, but goddamn, like in 87, this song was all over the place.
I think the song is good, and it was a hit when it was two other songs. One of those was called Sioux Studio, and the other one was St. Elmo's Fire, Man in Motion. All they did was combine the two songs to make this one. And oh, by the way, David Foster helped write this. He's the one that wrote St. Elmo's Fire. So that's what this is. I don't mind it, but it was already two other good songs.
David Foster wrote Sam Elmo's Fire. You mean John Parr didn't write that song?
No, John Parr didn't write. John Parr wrote Naughty Naughty.
And St. Elmo's Fire.
Go listen to it. You can pick out Sioux Studio and John Parr there at the St. Elmo's Fire bits in the chorus.
So the Sioux Studio story, I don't know if you've ever heard this, but Phil Collins in an interview a couple of times has said he would write on the piano and he would be mush-mouthing, right? So, and he said, like that first record, face value, like 90% of what he mush-mouthed ended up on the record. So he's on the piano writing this song, and he's mush-mouthing, Sioux Studio, Sioux Studio. And he's like, the hell is Susu Studio? He tried to replace it. He couldn't come up with anything else.
So he left anything else that rhymed.
That's right. He couldn't make it sound any better. So he's like, I guess I'll just go with Susu Studio. Because everybody keeps asking him, what the hell is Susu Studio? Because I don't know. Steven, to me, it's a memorable chorus. It's a great melody. Maybe it is because I like those two other songs too. So maybe that's what it is. But even the na-na-na's at the end work.
You can actually sing Saint Elmo's Fire in the chorus, and it works perfectly.
Oh, really? I'm going to try that later.
That's right.
Well, I love Saint Elmo's Fire, the song. I like Susu Studio, the song. And I absolutely love The Secret of My Success, the song. So I have a definite type. And it's funny because I watched this movie probably 2 or 3 weeks ago myself and enjoyed it. It's really interesting to watch a movie from that time period because it's a period that doesn't seem so far away from me as an adult, but at the same time, it's lacking all the stuff that we've kind of come to just, you know, take for granted, like cell phones and stuff like that, like, you know, computers, cell phones, none of that stuff is really in the movie. So I find this time period quite interesting. It's interesting that it had all these outside riders along with Jack Blades. Look, I love this song. It's catchy. It's soundtrack Night Ranger, obviously, at its best. Even though it has all these riders, it still, to me, it still sounds like Night Ranger. I love the pre-chorus. I love the bridge before the break in the solo section. It's kind of weird because it's a Night Ranger song that doesn't necessarily have a solo. It kind of has that little breakdown thing and, you know, the little sort of funky guitar riff, but it doesn't really have a guitar solo, which is sort of different for Night Ranger, right? Because all their songs pretty much have guitar solos.
I was going to mention that it's got a very unique lead. It is a lead, but it's a finger picked. It's like something you would do on an acoustic guitar, but he's finger picking on the electric distorted. And it's got this kind of cool sound. I've never heard anybody do that. Especially you wouldn't think to do that in a, you know, pop hit song that they're writing, but that's what he did. And it sounds pretty cool.
And it's got that little funky vibe to it, right? It's kind of a funky rhythmic type thing that you're talking about.
Cause he's finger picking. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Cause it has that kind of, yeah, it's unique.
I finger picked my nose the other day.
Oh, good. And Steven, if I remember right, I think they've pretty much dumped this song live. I don't think they do it live anymore.
Well, they haven't done it in the set list in a while, but they do pull it out every once in a while.
Easy.
Oh, Lord. Now we got somewhere else. But yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't think they played it live in quite some time, but I don't think it's as far removed as some of the other songs.
All right. So we get to the sixth song on the record, and there's only 9 songs on this record, by the way. And Blades has a solo write or co-write on every song, you know, because he's Superman. Carry On, right out of the gate, you get this great guitar riff. Feels like more rocking Night Ranger. Great verse melody. Songs written well overall. I mean, I think it could have been a single.
Yeah, it's got this great big chunky riff at the beginning. And you know that, okay, we're going to get a rock song now. We had our soundtracks song. Now we're going to get a rock song. And then it does kind of like go a little Huey Lewis in the verse, which is, I don't know, I kind of heard like it went to a place I wasn't expecting in the verse, but it's pretty good. And then it kind of hit me also that it reminds me of, for some reason, it reminds me of Triumph a little bit. Maybe it's the way he's singing it or something, just reminds me a little bit of Triumph. And I'll swear to God, in the lead section, he is playing the riff from Spirit of Radio. It almost sounds note to note, note for note. Go listen to it.
Yeah.
This whole record is Kevin picking out other songs that are...
They wanted to be a prog band, I'm telling you. Go listen to it. It's like, oh my God, that's the Spirit of Radio riff. I think they're just stealing riffs. That's okay. Everybody
is Spirit of the Radio Rush?
Yes, of course it is.
Oh, yeah. No, thanks. All right. Stephen, carry on. I figured because it was a little more rock and you probably joined this song a little bit more.
Yeah, I think, it picks up the pace of the record a little bit. It's a rocker. It has a decent course. Again, not that much memorable about this tune, but I still like it.
That's what I thought, too. It's lukewarm. It's good, but it's not outstanding. Same thing.
All right. So the next song we have is Better Let It Go. And Kevin, I can explain it basically in one word. Meh. It's a dictionary definition of meh. Look up meh in the dictionary. You got Better Let It Go with the Superman pose. I don't know what else to tell you.
They should just let it go. Let it go. Don't put it on the album. The keys, I don't know what sound he dialed up on this one, but that keyboard sound absolutely drives me nuts. I don't want to ever hear the song again. I'm done.
And Steven, the vocal melody wasn't great. Like, it's just all kinds of meh. Like, everything about the song.
All right. So written by Kelly Keegi and Jack Blades. It's sort of an acoustic type, very 80s keyboard sound. It was driving me nuts because I was listening to the keyboard patches in this song. And I was like, what is that from? Because that's from something. It's from a song I like. It's from an 80s song I like. What is this? It was driving me batshit crazy. I was like, this is from something. And finally, I had to shut off everything and just sit there for a minute with nothing because I was playing it out in my head. And finally, I was like, holy shit. That keyboard song sound that you're talking about, the keyboard sound, is from Don Henley's Sunset Grill. That's exactly what it is. It's Sunset Grill.
You know why? Because Don Henley owns a Roland D50.
I'm stuck also.
It is flat out of that. So I was like, there's nothing for me that is memorable in this song. It's the same theme that I've harped on throughout a lot of this record. But again, it's not a song that I hate. I guess essentially I'm agreeing with Sonny. It's meh. I don't hate it. But I'm also going, okay, what's memorable about this? Oh, the memorable part is the Sunset Grill keyboard solo that's in this song.
Yeah.
So the next song we got is I Know Tonight, and I was thinking Kevin is going to absolutely love this song because it feels a little bit darker, and then it goes to peppy. And I'm like, Kevin's going to like the dynamic of this song. Watch. Am I right?
Well, first, you did mention the beginning with a little bit of that Yanni intro. You know, you're getting a little new wavy there. Fitz was really getting a setup for this one. But then it starts rocking, and yes, I think this is kind of cool. I think the chorus isn't as strong as the verse. So the verse has kind of that darkness to it, and then it gets really light with the chorus. I, of course, like the dark side better, so I would rather them not go so bright and happy with it, but I didn't mind the song. I think, again, the guitar harmonies, there's some guitar wizardry in the lead section. I mean, this just badass. And you guys tell me, is this the album that really shines above all from a guitar standpoint as far as the leads are concerned?
Midnight Madness to me is where it's at.
I think their guitar playing has been consistent throughout all the records, honestly. I mean, the first song you hear is Don't Tell Me You Love Me, and that's the introduction of Watson and Gillis, and it, to me, it never lets up throughout the first four records.
Yeah, I think where I'm going is, for me, I'm hearing a lot more tricks. Like, they are throwing in some tricks and some just crazy things that they hadn't done in other albums up to this point. So I don't know if this is the peak, if they're like technical prowess, but
I think there are a couple songs where Jeff has become more prominent in some of the stuff, because you can hear him doing the eight finger technique thing throughout some of these other songs.
Yeah, just killer. I mean, it makes a song into a pretty damn good song.
Yeah. Yeah, and Steven, that's what I was going to say, is this is not the best song to me on the album, but it most likely has the best guitar solos in the song. And that's just, as you said, Jeff's out there doing the eight-finger thing. It's becoming more acceptable, right? Because every guitar player in hair metal is doing this now, and it's not just Eddie.
Yeah, I hate the very beginning of this song. I don't like it at all. But I'm fine with it once it kicks in. I like the chorus okay, and the bridge to get to the solo section. I like, if you listen closely, you hear a lot of the honky tonk piano playing that's in there, which I think adds to the song. It's kind of nice. The jangly piano and stuff that's going on in the background there is pretty good. So it's not bad.
And then we close the album with Hearts Away. You know, you got to have the ballad because they've had success with ballads. They close another album with a ballad. I think Jack's trying here, and Jack sings it well. This is not Sister Christian 2. Like, it's just not written as well. Kevin, what'd you think?
Let's see. I have two things written down. The first thing is they were obviously listening to Stryper before they recorded this album, because he's totally trying to do Honestly here. And then the next thing I wrote is Steven is going to love this one. Not.
Steven, I will tell you, though, the guitar solo is fucking perfect for the song. Like, those guys are like, okay, we're going to make some of this song as perfect as it can be. But the vocal melody and stuff like that just doesn't have Sing Me Away or Sister Christian 2. It's just like, I guess you can't just keep going to that same well. It's not going to work as well.
Well, two things you can count on in life, death and taxes. And to add a third thing to that, the end of every Night Ranger album will end with a thud. You know, I don't know what it is. They always want to end the Night Ranger record with a slower tune. My first notes were ending with a banger again, I see, with a big fat laugh out loud after that. It was the second single released, I guess, and it was not a hit. I don't know, man. It's okay with some of the other slower tunes on this record. I mean, I guess this one's okay. The chorus is not too bad, but it's just okay for me, dog.
I was just going to throw in, I do think at the end, it seems like they were going for, knowing that they had this ballad, it seemed like they were going for a little Home Sweet Home at the end, because the guitar finish at the end is almost kind of mimicking what was done on Home Sweet Home. So it sounds like, okay, that worked for those guys. Let's do that with our ballad here at the end.
And we have a better singer, so it'll sound better. Yeah. right. So I want to get everybody's top two, bottom two, and get your final thoughts. I'll go first here. My top two were Color of Your Smile and The Secret of My Success. My bottom two were Better Let It Go and Hearts Away. Final thoughts for me, the album's top heavy. Like the first five songs I love, then there's two meh and two eh, right? So there's a lot of synth. It is 1987. But I'm still kind of surprised that a couple of these songs, like Color of Your Smile and Secret of My Success, could have easily been top 40. So there's something that these guys are starting to lose as everybody else is gaining now. The entire genre dies 3 years from now, but, and they were in the middle of it. So like if they released Midnight Madness in 87, are we talking about a diamond album now? Like, I don't even know, right? Were they a little too early? Who knows? But it kind of feels like they kind of chose the pop route and hair metal wasn't going to allow this pop basically band to, I guess, be part of its genre. I don't know. I've never really seen Nightmare Ranger as hair metal anyway, so. Kevin, top two, bottom two, and your final thoughts on the album?
Yeah, so my top two are Big Life and Love Is Standing Near. I think, just to your point, I think it's very top heavy, this album. I think there are great songs up front. I'm not as huge of a fan of Color of Your Smile as you are, but it's not a bad song. I think the first side is pretty damn good. Even though, you know, The Secret of My Success was already written before they released it, I still think it's a good song, but then it kind of goes downhill from there a little bit. So, and I think, oh, I didn't get my bottom two, did I? So my bottom two would be Better Let It Go and I Know Tonight. I just, yeah, I don't like really like either one of those that much. just kind of blah. But there's, like I said, the final thought is the guitar playing on this entire album, whether it's a good song or not, the guitar playing is amazing. It's fun to listen now. I wish I would have known back in the day how great those two guys were, because I didn't give it a shot. And so I missed, you know, rocking out for that many years with some really good guitar. But it's fun exploring it now. In a way. So just great guitarist, great guitar album, even though it's really keyboard heavy. You still get these amazing leads on this. So I think it is a timestamp for 1987, this album. I mean, it is so 87. You know, it can just take you there immediately with the sounds that are on, not even the songs, it's just the sounds that you're hearing. Like, that's 1987. That's what I'm hearing.
Yeah. Steven, top two, bottom two, and your final thoughts. And Kevin just made me think of something. You know, these guys, you could say, are underrated as 80s rock guitar players. But you know what? Same thing happened to Steve Stevens, because Billy Idol was writing pop songs, right? So it's like these guys that kind of ended up in the movie soundtrack bands in the late 80s kind of got lost, and they weren't going to be Steve Vai because they couldn't get that job. Now, if I guess Gillis stays in Ozzy, maybe people do know who he is, but because of these soundtrack songs, kind of lose him. So Steven, your thoughts on all that?
Yeah, I see what you're saying with all that stuff. I semi-agree with some of that stuff. My top two songs, honestly, it's a three-pack for me. Big Life, Secret of My Success, and Color Your Smile, I think are all fantastic songs and are on the top of my list. My bottom two is Rain Come Crashing Down, which is not good, and Better Let It Go, which I think Better Let It Go, we all three had that in our bottom two. It's just not a great song. For me, overall, this record, I think it was Kevin, one of you two said it's very top heavy, and I agree with that. It's, you know, there's only 9 songs on this record, but the songs are kind of lengthy, probably more so than they really need to be. And, you know, it's a 42-minute record overall. I don't know, man. I think this is probably why I started losing interest in it is I like songs like Big Life, Color Your Smile, rather, and Secret of My Success. But then there are songs like Carry On and I Know Tonight and Love Is Standing Near where I don't hate them, but there's not anything that I necessarily gravitate towards those songs. They're not memorable for me.
All right. So we are going to connect it to Kiss. So let's talk Kiss a little bit.
Hey, Hollywood. You know what time it is. Let's connect it to KISS.
You wanted the best and you got the best! The hottest band in the world, KISS!
So while Night Ranger is releasing Big Life, Kiss is in the studio recording Crazy Nights. Gene is basically absent. Paul doesn't want to produce the album all by himself and give Gene executive credit. So they enlist Ron Nevison, because Ron Nevison had just saved Heart So they figure they can save Kiss too. Now, what's interesting is the three separate stories you get. Okay, so here's what Paul says during this time. So he says he was tired of Simmons' lack of commitment and one day told him, look, you're off doing all these other things while reaping the benefits of this band and I'm getting screwed. It's not fair for me to put in this kind of time while somebody else who's supposed to be my partner is not. And then he said, Gene looked at me and said, that's fair. He said I could use Gene's input, but my attitude at that point was certainly, I'm not going to listen to a guy who's managing cabaret singers and producing five bands while I was trying to make an album. Gene says, when we started working on Crazy Nights, we were looking for someone else to pull the cart, another person to help guide the band. So we hooked up with a producer named Ron Nevison, whom Paul wanted to work with for a while, although I never did. Okay, here's Nevison's story. Nevison goes, well, it was the only album I did with them. I do know that Gene wasn't there all the time. Obviously, Bruce was, and to some extent, so was Eric. Mostly, a majority of the work on the album I did was with Bruce and Paul. The bass tracks were initially cut, and Gene only had to do lead vocals, really. I must say, most of the time that Gene was there, he was in the back of the studio reading Variety. Although Simmons' participation was low for the album, he did contribute in providing me with 20 to 25 songs for potential material. One of them was a song called I'm Gonna Put a Log in Your Fireplace that I didn't like. And Paul had the song Sword and Stone that I didn't like. They wanted to name the album Who Dares Wins and then Condemnation. And I was like, what? And then I found out that Paul and Eric weren't getting along. That's why Eric wasn't there a lot. So that's Nevison's story. Okay. So in the end, they get this album recorded, and this song that we're going to play for you is lyrically based in Gene's while he's going to community college. So he knew a girl he wanted to get with. All the things that he was doing was not working. She finally gives it up in a backseat of a car to Gene's best friend at the time. So here is Good Girl Gone Bad. Check it out.
I've grown to like a lot more of this stuff on Crazy Nights than I used to, because at one point in time, I really didn't like this record at all. It's just too clean and sheen for me, but this song's okay. I mean, it's not too bad.
So, Sonny, I have to ask you, because you and I came into Kiss at the same point, which is Asylum, right? And we both loved that album. You picked this up, I'm assuming, right after it came out or when it came out, right?
Yep.
So what was your thought, because you loved Asylum so much, I don't know if you had other albums by that point, but when you got Crazy Nights, was it like, is this the same band?
So I loved Asylum so much, I had not gotten any other Kiss records yet. I had seen them live twice already. So when Crazy Nights came out, went and bought it, and I'm like, oh, this sounds a little different. But then when I saw the name Ron Nevison, I already had the Heart record, right? So I'm like, oh, okay, this is a producer makes it sound a certain way. I loved every song on that record, Crazy Nights, the minute I heard it, and to this day, love every song on that record the way it's written. I love it, period. I think it is a flawless record, and I think if you're into 80s Kiss, it's hard not to like the record.
I'm just surprised because the sound is so different than what we got on Asylum. Asylum is very kind of raw because obviously it didn't have Ron Nevison. But I agree, Ron Nevison brought the tricks that he brought to Heart. He brought them to Kiss. And that's why you got some of those keyboards in there. And that's why the bass gets buried, which I don't like the way he recorded his albums. And he kind of buried the bass in it and brought the treble up. And the weird thing for me was Gene's voice. This is the only album where he sounds this way, where he doesn't have the Gene growl. He's singing kind of softer. And it's just like, I was just like, is this the same band? It took me a minute. I love this album because I'm a Kiss nerd, but it's not one that I go back to that often though.
I think it's a good point about the growl. You got to remember, because I'm not a Kiss nerd at this point, right? I'm becoming the Kiss nerd. I don't know Gene is the demon, really. I don't know what that means. All I know is the guy who's dressed as like Golden Girls or whatever. And his voice to me got better, right? It was just like listening to Menichetti at Mean Streak and Black Tiger. By the time he gets to Contagious, his voice is smoothed out a little bit. And I'm like, oh, wait a second. His voice got better. Nowadays, I think I like the Menichetti Mean Streak Black Tiger voice more than I like the 10 and Contagious voice. But then I was like, wow, these guys are getting to be better singers. That's pretty cool. I didn't know he was losing his demon. I fucking, what the hell knows what that is? I don't know what that is.
I liked Asylum. And as soon as I heard the first single off of Crazy Nights, which was Crazy Nights, I skipped that record. I was like, hell no. I hate that song.
Actually, it's Crazy, Crazy Nights.
I hate that song so bad. No.
I love the song, but it's a different Kiss, and it's all Ron Nevison. I mean, they didn't sound like that any other time on any album. Yeah, crazy, crazy nice.
Yeah, Nevison definitely had something, because that Heart record, I love that Heart record, and I'm not sure I love a lot of other Heart records. They're hit and miss for me on some of the earlier stuff, definitely. Then they go to that low where I almost like nothing, and then they come out, and then you got Heart, Bad Animals, and I was like, hey, what is this band all about? And now you find out that Ann and Nancy hated that period of their life, but okay.
I agree. There's not a bad Heart album.
All right, let's wrap this thing up. Let's move towards the end. That is your Night Ranger Big Life record. Up next month is Man in Motion. Very special thanks to our guest, Kevin Williams from the In Obscuria podcast. You can always catch Kevin and the In Obscuria podcast wherever you find your favorite podcast to listen to. That's available out there. We'll put the link in the show notes so you guys can click on that. If you are having trouble finding it, that'll make it easy for you. Sonny Pooney, do you have anything to add before we get up on out of here?
Well, I just realized that if you subscribe to the conspiracy theory that they already stole St. Elmo's Fire, and then they stole Man in Motion for the next record. It completes the drive.
See?
They stole it all. Fuck it.
There you go.
All right.
Well,
thanks, Kevin, for indulging us, even though you picked an album that I didn't give you on the list.
Well, I haven't heard that album you gave me, so, you know, I didn't know any better. I only have four albums. I'm actually looking forward to the rest of this series because it'll be all new to me. I'll get to discover all of these songs that are coming up for the first time listening to you guys. So that should be depressing.
And wait till we get to a couple of those records. All right. Once again, Kevin, thanks for joining us on the podcast and putting in your 2 cents. We always appreciate your thoughts and opinions on this show.
Well, thank you guys so much. I really, really, really appreciate you having me on every year. I'm like, oh, they actually texted me back. I can't believe it. So thank you.
Well, we text you. You don't always text back, at least not for 48 to 72 hours.
Oh, but if you email, it's 48 to 72 years. Yeah.
That is absolutely true. How Kevin Williams organizes his life, I'm really not too sure about that. It's super questionable. But anyway, that's a story for another podcast episode. Until next week, see ya.
Later.
That's the show. So let's shuffle, rattle, and roll us out of here. Until next week, always remember peace, love, and rock and roll.
Ah!
If you're a Spotify listener, check out some of the killer playlists we have put together for your listening pleasure. Links to the playlist are in the show notes, or just search Growing Up Rock playlist in Spotify. Growing Up Rock is a proud member of the Pantheon Network. Pantheon is the place for music lovers. Check us out, along with many other great music podcasts, on the Pantheon Podcast Network.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more Fantasy Points.